Senator Tom Carper is the ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. And I imagine, Senator, you're quite proud of the fact that the House of Representatives has seen the light and is moving cybersecurity legislation, which you've been pushing and working on for quite a long time, sir. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Francis. There are three takeaways for me from the election last November. One, people want us to work together. Two, in here in Congress in Washington. Two, people want us to get things done. Three, people want us to really take steps that will further strengthen our economic recovery. One of the threats to our economic recovery, and actually to our economic vitality, is the desire of criminal organizations of other nations, sovereign nations, to steal information from us, not just personally identifiable information, not just to, like weapons systems and that sort of thing, but also research and development, ideas for products, pharmaceuticals, ideas for all kinds of technology, and that I call that our intellectual seed corn. One of the best ways to stop that is to strengthen the ability of the Department of Homeland Security, among others, to actually do their job and help us on the cyber front. We did a lot of that in the last Congress with great help from Senator Tom Coburn, who has left the Senate, but working together on several major pieces of legislation to strengthen the ability of the Department of Homeland Security to do their job. We've done that, and the DHS is now, I think, a stronger partner as a result. The question next is, well, what do we do in order to encourage businesses to share information with one another when they are attacked? How do we encourage businesses to share information with the federal government, whether it's the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, or someone else? And how do we make sure that the federal government is sharing information back to the private sector so that they can do a better job of protecting their information, if you will? And the idea is we want to incentivize companies, businesses, to share information with one another and with the federal government by providing them liability protection when they do and when they follow certain safeguards and procedures. The question is before us is, which federal agency do we want to say to the business sector, you have to share initially with Department of Homeland Security, with FBI, with the National Security Agency, which do you have to share with in order to get the liability protection? And my legislation says basically we want you to share with the Department of Homeland Security. They're set up with a couple of privacy operations within the Department of Homeland Security. They can scrub the information that they get from businesses and make sure that they take away the personally identifiable information that could be privacy concerns. There are other people who feel that's less important, that the Department of Homeland Security be, if you will, the window, if you will, into which that information is shared with the federal government. We'll work this out. We'll work this out. But that's one of the major things that continues to divide us. The other side of cybersecurity is it's called data breach, and think Target, think Home Depot, and the question is, should we ask, in this case, the merchants, like Target, like Home Depot, should we ask them to do a better job of securing their sensitive information that they have? Should there be some requirements for us, instead of using 49 different state laws, should we have a single federal standard, security standard? Should we have a federal standard for requiring investigations when there's a data breach that affects a lot of people? And what kind of stipulations should there be for notifying people when their personally identifiable information has been disclosed? So that's like a first cousin to cybersecurity and information sharing, but they're both important to our country, and I think to our businesses, and I think to us as individuals.
I had Karen Evans, the former eGov administrator, at the U.S. Cyber Challenge on the program last week, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I came away from our conversations, both one-on-one and with a number of guests, that on her hit list right now, this concept of liability protections is probably the most important thing, because the next step for that will be that insurance companies will be able to price the risk that's associated with the liability protections, and that will be the next major step toward companies being comfortable sharing information.
Yeah, that's important. Not many people realize, but the idea of, you know, we have information for car insurance, we have information for fires, we have information for floods, we have all kinds of information. And now we are developed, the market is developed to provide protection, if you will, a coverage for businesses who may have maybe subject to an intrusion. And the one of the nice things about auto insurance is, you know, if we do a better job of like defensive driving, safer cars, and that sort of thing, then we're going to bring down the cost of our auto insurance. By the same token, for businesses or others who want to make sure that they don't pay an arm and a leg for cyber coverage, but they actually have something of value, they need to provide good cyber hygiene, conduct good cyber hygiene, and just be doing what have the right kind of technology that enables them to better defend against attacks. So it's interesting to see how the private sector is coming in here to play, I think, in a potentially very constructive role.
Senator Tom Carper is the ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, and you have worked once again with your chairman, Senator Johnson from Wisconsin, for a piece of legislation on transitions. We're only about 2 years or so, less than that now, 20 couple months, from a transition from the Obama administration to an administration to be named later, as they say in baseball language. And when that happens, General Services Administration will take the lead, as it's done in the past. But what would happen differently under the legislation that you and Senator Johnson are proposing compared to the way the transitions have worked in the past, sir?
Well, it wasn't that long ago, as I'm sure you know. We didn't think much about presidential transitions until the elections were, like, literally upon us. And that didn't work. And what we now call for in the legislation, actually, the genesis for this legislation is not from me, it's not from Senator Ron Johnson. Actually, it goes back to a former senator, interim senator named Ted Coffman, who used to be for 20 years Joe Biden's chief of staff. And when Joe became our vice president, there was a vacancy for 2 years in Delaware for the U.S. senator's slot, and our governor appointed Joe Biden's former chief of staff, Ted Coffman, to fill that slot. One of the pieces of legislation that Ted worked on during his 3 years as a U.S. Senator was legislation dealing with presidential transitions. And Ted, in addition to all his other activities, was taught at Duke for many years. He's a smart, very smart guy. And also, he was very much involved in a transition when the Obama-Biden team succeeded George W. Bush and Dick Cheney in 2008-2009. So he's thought a whole lot about this. But we've been working with Ted Coffman. We brought him in off the not off the DL, but he's back in the starting lineup, and it's been very good to help us. The legislation that we're offering now tries to provide. I like to say some common sense improvements to the earlier act. It was in 1963, and it outlined some of the shared responsibilities between those that are leaving, in this case Obama, Biden, in a year and a half, and the incoming administrations who are the Hillary or who knows who might be coming in to try to make sure that we hit the deck running. The among the major provisions is that we require under our bill a senior White House led interagency transition team. It's got to be in place at least 6 months before the election day. If you back 6 months up before, I think that would be the early part of May of next year, and that a working level interagency group would develop a strategy, if you will, for transitions, but to stand that up early on. In addition, we would clarify the duties of the General Services Administration, which they were already spelled out to some extent in the earlier law, but for providing office support space for major candidates, and to designate, I think this is important, designate a career employee at GSA to serve as a federal transition coordinator. And finally, the legislation designates some folks who are going to be serving in a, if you will, an acting capacity in a senior political position during a transition by not later than, I think, mid-September of a presidential year, so that the beginning of next September. And finally, when you become a senator or become a governor, there's a little bit of training that goes on before you assume your responsibilities. And in this case, too, we provide some training opportunities for incoming presidential appointees.
I went back and looked at the 1998 to 2000 window, and I did not see any discussion from either Vice President Gore or Governor Bush at that time about presidential transitions. I did see in the summer of 2008, after the nominees were determined by each party, Senator McCain criticized Senator Obama when he announced his transition team that summer. You're measuring the drapes and all of that. What do you think has happened in the 8 years since then to cause this level of interest? Your office points out, Washington Post wrote about the importance of orderly transitions. You have a bill, the Partnership for Public Services, working on its Ready to Govern initiative. National Academy of Public Administration has started a transition initiative. There are a lot of people thinking about this and trying to determine best practices. What's driving that, do you think, Senator?
I think some really smart people, Ted Coughlin, who's on our side, fellow named Mike Leavitt, former governor of Utah, is very much involved in this on behalf of the Romney team, highly respected. He succeeded me as chairman of the National Governors Association a number of years ago. He was Secretary of Health and Human Services, and just a very, very bright guy. There are two people very highly respected on either side of the aisle, and they've been able to speak pretty much with one voice on this to remind us of how important it is that we get this right. We just can't hand the ball over on Inauguration Day and expect our government to work. We like to think that it does, but it's very difficult. The other thing that's really tough here is when you have an administration basically on the due the day that the new president is sworn in, the folks that are cabinet secretaries or in many cases deputy secretaries and so forth, they go. I mean, especially if there's a hostile takeover, if you will. And so you have all these departments across the federal government, the executive branch of the federal government, are without Senate-confirmed leadership. And in some cases, those are filled very quickly, usually Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense. But in some cases, we've seen the position of Secretary of Homeland Security, for example, highly very important position, just languish forever before we can get people confirmed. And in some cases, we went for almost a year and a half trying to get last year and this year, trying to get the full complement of leadership confirmed with the Department of Homeland Security. So I think one of the things that Senator Johnson and I are interested in doing is reducing the number of positions that require a Senate confirmation. There are entirely too many positions that take up time on the floor. We end up, we should focus on a relative handful and make sure we're getting those done quickly, the important positions, get them done quickly. And for those positions that don't really require Senate confirmation, have another process in place.
Do you want to see some of those transition to career positions like the DHS Chief Human Capital Officer, or would you be satisfied for them to transition to stay as political appointees but no longer require Senate confirmation?
Yeah, I'd say it could be a combination. Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, and trying to think the Republican, I'm forgetting who the Republican was the lead on this, but they had, maybe, I think it was maybe Lamar Alexander. They are the leaders, if you will, the Rules Committee in the Senate. They came up with an idea a couple of years ago to reduce by several hundred the number of folks that needed a Senate confirmation vote, but there are like thousands that need it, and it's still way too many. They did good yeoman's work. We need to go beyond that. Part of it is to say, for some of the positions, you don't need a Senate confirmation. For others, we actually have a list of names that the president, a certain category the president could nominate, and unless there's an objection, then those people are actually sort of like deemed to be confirmed. And so it's going to be a combination of those approaches.
Senator, I thank you very much for your time today. I congratulate you on this legislation, and I wish you well, and I look forward to visiting your state and spending a good chunk of my summer there this year.
All right, that's great. Welcome. Welcome. You know what they say about Rehoboth Beach? Rehoboth means room for all.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.